Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pustaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samanita Namale. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Navasesha Sanyavadi Paskati Desatane. Sakti, how did the class go this morning? Who remembers something from this morning's class? Raise your hands. Vera Prabhu. Ah. Excuse me? Very esoteric. Anyone else remember anything? Yes. Wow, that's a deep comment. What causes the agitation of the mind? Yes, it's that great enemy, the mode of passion. Anyone else remember anything from this morning? Yes. What shouldn't we imitate? What should we not imitate? What did Madhavendra Puri do that we should not imitate? Yes. Yes. Johnny? Yeah, that's actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur differentiates between ruchi, the stage of ruchi or taste, and asakti, attachment. When one has taste, sometimes one's mind wanders away from Krishna and you have to bring it back. And when one has attachment, it's like what you said, that one's mind is so attached to Krishna. Why would one become attached to Krishna? What do you mean by that? That he's all attractive. That means one is getting pleasure from his association, and naturally It's the law of nature that whatever we get pleasure from, we become attached to. So this is the great challenge in Krishna consciousness, is to get so much pleasure in Krishna consciousness that we become so much attached to Krishna. Increasingly, forever. Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam means that Krishna's, the pleasure that we can get from chanting, which means associating from Krishna, is an unending ocean of bliss. We can never reach the end of it. Well, everything in the material world, we reach the end of the pleasure that it can give us, and then it brings us disgust. The same thing that brought us pleasure, we reject. But Krishna is not like that. So how can we go beyond the superficial to develop our attraction and taste for Krishna consciousness. This is the challenge. Being on the superficial level is always somewhat precarious. In the word precarious, what does precarious mean? Difficult. But within it, within the concept of precarious is danger. So it is in our greatest interest to go beyond the superficial, to go deeper, so we stop being in a precarious position, because I heard Prabhupada recently say in a lecture that the position of a sadhaka is somewhat dangerous, because Maya can come so easily and capture one, because the nature of the mind. What is the nature of the mind? Flickering. What's the word? The Sanskrit word. Yes. Chanchalam. You also said, was that you said obstinate? Where did that come from? Yeah, obstinate also. What does obstinate mean? Stubborn. It holds on to poison, and you try to take it away, and I want it. Whatever it wants, it's stubborn about. But it's so amazing, on the other hand, that soon as it's left it, say you're thinking about poison, and it's so stubbornly attached, and then somehow or another it flickers again and goes to something else, and then the poison just evaporates, the thoughts of poison become insignificant, and you don't even care about it anymore. It seems for a moment the most important thing in existence, or the only important thing in existence, and then the mind flickers again, and it's completely insignificant. So what is this creature that we're dealing with, this mind? It is so much the center of our material existence. Practically speaking, it is the center of our material existence. It feeds the false ego, which is the center. It feeds it, it protects it, it cares for it. It gives the consciousness something to do, always something to do to avoid Krishna. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata. This is what we do all day long, every day. Icha and dvesha. I like this, I don't like this. I want this, I don't want that. All day long, we're fully engaged by the three modes of material nature. So therefore, when we do our sadhana, the main principle, in one sense, of course the main principle is to do it. But say while we're chanting, the main principle is all day long, my mind is flickering between this very important thing and that very important thing and this extremely important thing. And my enemy is like this, and this person's like this, and I have to do this tomorrow, and I did this yesterday, and I'll do it better, and I'm going to say this to this person when that person says this to me. On and on and on and on, without stop. Is it only me who has that experience? So sadhana means to say, okay, my dear mind, why don't you just sit over here for 1 minute, and this particular time when I'm chanting, etc., hearing, you're very, very good, my dear mind, but just for this short time, just sit here very peacefully, or sit somewhere peacefully, and I'm going to try to give this time to Krishna, to just hearing and chanting about Krishna. It's a determination that has to be made. That's what... Look at Dhruva Maharaj. He was so focused and determined. And therefore, within how many months? 6 months. Because he was so focused. Because his desire was so strong. He was so focused. Within 6 months, he achieved a perfection that others, they might not achieve in thousands and thousands crores of lives. Because his desire was so strong, his determination was fixed and focused. He knew what he wanted, and he didn't want anything else. He didn't want anything else from what he wanted. We know what we want, but we want so many other things different from what we want. And we're not some, if you know what I mean. In other words, we are bahushaka tonantascha. What does bahushaka mean? Yes. It is like if someone was driving to Melbourne, and most of us will drive to Melbourne later today, and we know where we want to go, but every street to the left and to the right, we go down to see what's there. And then we come back to the road and go forward and take back to the side. That's what my japa mostly seems like every morning. And therefore, it's not surprising that it takes me a long time. It will take me a long time to get where Dhruva Maharaj attained in 6 months. But it was his desire and his determination. But ultimately, and Krishna willing, there's one line in one purport that of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's in the prayers that Dhruva Maharaj offered the Lord that is very telling. And if Krishna willing, we actually get up to that point. Because I have a problem. My problem is that this particular seminar of Dhruva Maharaj, even part A, there's a part B too. But part A is six full classes. And we only have three full classes. So what to do? That's one thing we could do. But another thing we could do is jump and see if we can not quite get to the end. But anyway, that's what I thought we would do. I considered giving the classes in Melbourne too. But where are we up to in the Bhagavatam in Melbourne? Interesting. The Avadhuta Brahmana. Who is the Avadhuta Brahmana? What's his name? Do you know? Huh? Dattatreya. And he's the Brahmana. He's the one that in the that Yadu Maharaj, when he in the ninth canto, when he refused to give up his youth because he said, if I don't enjoy now, then I won't be able to renounce later on. And then later on, because we sometimes may say things like that too, but we never quite get around to the renouncing part. But Yadu actually, Maharaj Yadu did actually end up renouncing when he met the Avadhuta Dattatreya. He understood the point. So let us speak something about Dhruva Maharaj. Let's see if we can. Om agyana timirandasya jana jana salakaya chaksu samilatan jena tasmai sri gurave namah sri chaitanya manubhistam stapitam jena bhutale sayam upakadamayam dadati sapandantikam vanshakalpa dubhyascha kripa sindhu vaiva cha Patitanam Pabanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? We've tried this morning's class. Everyone was listened very carefully and mentioned so many wonderful, powerful points from that class. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? Raise your hand if you remember something from yesterday's class. Yes, Madhuji. In the future.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Yes.
Anger can produce intense absorption.
Oh. But that's not our recommended path, by the way. We don't want anyone jumping from the lotus feet of Prabhupada to try to find a pure devotee of Shishupal to take initiation from. So Dhruva was then instructed by Narada Muni. Now, the first thing that Narada Muni said to Dhruva, I'll read the Sanskrit. This is text 40. Narada uvacha, jananya bhita panta. Of course, the great sage Narada said, jananya abhita panta, that your mother has actually stated the correct path. Because first, Saruchi said it, and then second, Suniti confirmed it, and now Narada Muni is saying the same thing. And what is that? Savai nisrayasya te. And that means that you will certainly, the ultimate goal of life for you is Vasudeva Tam. It is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unto him, bhaja tam pravanatmana. Unto him, you should pravanatmana means you should absorb your mind fully in him, in Krishna, Vasudeva, in bhaja. You should do intense tivrena bhakti yogena, intense mind-absorbing devotional service. So just think of what the instruction here from Narada to Dhruva is and how Dhruva followed it. But what was this instruction? What was the instruction? I just read it. It's not a trick question. Yes, say it. Yes, you do intense devotional service with your mind fully absorbed in him. And herein lies, again, as we were just speaking about, this is the problem why we don't get the result that Dhruva got so quickly, is because we perform our devotional service without intense absorption. So we don't get the very, very fast result. So it is not possible for us to say right now, or at least for me, that from now on, I'm going to do all my devotional service with pure intense absorption. It doesn't work like that. I mean, if we were, some very fortunate devotees can do that. They're going this way and they understand the right way to go and they can just turn like that and go the right way. As you're walking down the road, you realize you're going the wrong way and you can turn around and go the exact opposite way. But I tend to think that many of us are more like trains. You know, we have to sort of follow the tracks that we've put down, and when a train wants to turn, it doesn't, you know, go in exactly the opposite direction. It has to be a gradual. If a train is trying to turn too fast, what will happen?
Derail.
So we don't want to derail our Krishna consciousness, but yet we want to turn. We want to go in the right direction, and the right direction is full, intense absorption in the mind, of the mind in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, this is the process. This is the conclusion of Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sundarbha. This is the process, the Abhideya Tattva, that awards one prema bhakti. It is not by performing mixed devotional service, Mitra Bhakti, or lackadaisical, casual devotional service. You know, casual devotional service, when you chant your rounds while you're on the internet or watching television or something like that. That, okay, it's, that doesn't bring this kind of result. So very much we'll see it's a matter of desire. So Prabhupada's translation is this. The great sage Narada told Dhruva Maharaj, the instruction given by your mother Suniti, but just Prabhupada also explains, also in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, he says it's describing about Katvanga Maharaj. He says it's possible to surrender and give yourself fully with that intensity in one moment. It doesn't have to be like a train taking its gradual turning course. It can be in one moment, a half a moment. But what we don't want is to start turning this way and then think, uh-oh, and then turn around and go back. And then, oh no, this isn't good, and back and forth. No, we want to, if you're going to go very quickly and strongly, in a very absorbed way, then do it. And no whimsicalness. Be fixed. And determined. The instruction given by your mother Suniti to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you, Narada said. You should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord. And if one isn't capable of full absorption, there is trying one's best to move in that direction, coupled with humility, is a very good process. So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport here. Narada Muni is referred to here in the verse as Bhagavan because he can bless any person just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj. Why was he pleased with Dhruva Maharaj? His determination. And he could have at once personally given whatever Dhruva wanted. He was so powerful. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to engage the disciple in the proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before Arjuna, Prabhupada's giving an example. And even though he could have given him all facility for victory over the opposing party without a fight, because after all, you know, Krishna is Kalosman Lokachaya Krit. He's the time factor. With the blinking of his eye, the entire Kaurava army could have been annihilated without even the blinking of his eye, just by his Icha Shakti, his desire. But instead, Nimitta Karan Bhava Savya Sarchan, he wanted Arjuna to be the instrument of his fight, of this, what was ultimately going to happen. But Krishna could have done it all himself, but he did not. Instead, he asked Arjuna to fight. In the same way, Narada Muni asked asked Narada Muni, asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired results. And indeed, Dhruva did it. Now, in this section, Narada is going to instruct Dhruva what to do. Now, what he tells him to do, on one level, is neither practical nor possible for us to do. But on another level, on an essential level, it is exactly what the same process that we have been given. I'm going to summarize that process. And just going back to the point that Prabhupada was making, was that we tend to want the product. I want to get the result, and if there's a way we can avoid the process, we try our best to avoid the process. But we want the product. And that is not, so there's a cheating tendency towards a cheating mentality. We want the product, the result, but we don't want to undergo the hard work and the difficulty. Now, what's the benefit of undergoing the hard work and the difficulty? Experience. And what do you learn by the experience? You get wisdom. You get humility. You learn to depend on Krishna. We say we want something, but until we actually begin our journey seriously, we don't know how much we want it. When we start performing the process very seriously and become committed to the process, the first thing we confront is our insincerity and our laziness and our multifaceted desires, our lack of focus. So we want the most exalted product, but look what this is that's wanting. When we hear, as we heard a little bit yesterday, about the residents of Vrindavan and what their qualification is, their full absorption, their deep, deep, full love for Krishna, fully blossomed love for Krishna, and in a particular mood, and therefore they're in Vrindavan. But if someone gets there, theoretically, if it could happen, without being qualified, they can't be there. Just like Kamsa was face to face in front of Krishna. And what did he feel? He was terrified. Far different from what the residents of Vrindavan experienced when they saw Krishna. The wrestlers saw him in a fearful way. The foolish people saw him, what is this boy doing walking in here, dressed in, like a village boy, carrying an elephant's tusk on his shoulder that's bloody. Everyone sees Krishna according to their consciousness. Why? Yayatamam prapadyante. This is what Krishna reveals. According to our consciousness. So, when our consciousness is full of love for Krishna, then Krishna will reveal himself as he is, fully. So if we try to get the product without going through the process, we can't get the product, practically speaking. Because the consciousness has to become molded, it has to be transformed to the very core of our existence. To the very core of who we are, or who we actually are. Everything else has to be removed, neglected, tossed away is useless. So Krishna consciousness is very deep. Self-realization is very deep. A full transformation is required. And the process of Krishna consciousness, as our Prabhu here said, fills us with wisdom. It causes Krishna to reveal so many things to us. Yayatamam prapadyante. So the spiritual masters, Prabhupada, explain his duty, his business, so to speak, is to engage the disciple in the process. So that the disciple becomes tempered by following the process, purified and molded into shape, and sometimes hammered into shape by following the process very, very seriously and sincerely. And that, in one sense, is all it takes, sincerity and seriousness. And then Krishna sees that, and ultimately he's the one who benedicts by giving himself . So the process that he told Dhruva, and this is one reason why he tested his determination, because Dhruva wanted something so quickly. So he told them a very, very intense process. And he wanted to find out if he was actually determined enough to follow it. So first he told them the place that he should go. And that place was? Madhuvan. Raise your hand if you've been to Madhuvan. Oh, so many devotees have been to Madhuvan. What did you see when you went to Madhuvan? What temple? Yes. What was that demon's name? Lavansura. Salty demon. What else did you see? Did you see Dhruva Tila? The actual place where Dhruva performed his austerities. Huh? Yeah. There's a hill. A very, very nice place. On the first night, we showed, there was one little video in the middle of the slideshow that I had made. And there was all those parrots. You remember seeing those parrots? And that was taken in Madhuvan. Actually, Madhuvan is very, very sweet. And he told Dhruva to go there and perform his austerities, because there the lotus footprints of the Lord could be seen. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna, that is the place where Krishna walks around without any shoes. It is specially benedicted by the lotus footprints of the Lord. So that is the place. And then he told them to bathe in the holy Yamuna, which must have flowed near Madhuvan at that time, and bathe three times a day, become purified, keep clean. Because cleanliness is next to godliness. To cultivate the mode of goodness is essential. And then he asked him to perform Ashtanga Yoga for the purpose of purifying the consciousness. There's the Yam, Niyam, the rules and the regulations, the asanas, and then the pranayam. And by the purpose of the pranayam, or the breathing exercises, is the pratyahara, to withdraw the mind from the external world and focus it on Krishna within the heart. Dhyan, dharan, and then finally samadhi. So he describes the Lord's form, the form of the Lord is the meditation that the devotee wants to become absorbed in. And then he told them to chant japa. Of what mantra? He gave them the mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate. Very powerful mantra. Very powerful. Not of this world, not of this realm. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So meditation with japa, keeping clean, controlling one's mind, meditating on the Lord's form, living in a holy place, either a holy dham or a temple, or making one's house into a temple, a holy place, and have deities, and offering the deities what? Tulsi, because Tulsi is so dear to Krishna, especially Tulsi. In this way, so many instructions were given to Dhruva Maharaj, and to meditate on Leela Anukata, Krishna Anukata, or the Leela avatars, all the different avatars and their different pastimes. This is just basically the process of devotional service that we've been given as well. And to follow the acharyas. And the result of this, of following the process, is that one will fulfill one's desires. Not just by this is the result of the process, that you get whatever you want. Like if you put your left foot in front of your right and your right foot in front of your left, you get to where you're going by the process of walking. But it's not exactly like that. Narada Muni tells Dhruva that if you follow the process, the result that will give you the result that you want is actually that the Lord will bless you. It is His process. He'll be pleased with you. He'll bless you. Because the essence of the process is not mechanically doing it, it's bhakti. It's actions to please Him. I am doing this for your pleasure. For my pleasure, I'd be maybe doing 50,000 other things. But for your pleasure, I'm chanting your names. For your pleasure, I'm cooking and offering you food. For your pleasure, I'm decorating your beautiful form. For your pleasure, I'm doing this. Or picking flowers, growing fruits and vegetables, and cooking them and offering to you. So then, because devotional service means acting for Krishna's pleasure, then by His blessings, one gets what one desires. And this is what Narada Muni told Dhruva, because Dhruva had a very intense material desire. And then he explained, and practically the last thing that he explained, we'll read some of those verses, 59 to 62. Very interesting. Anyone, this is 59 and 60, anyone who thus engages, according to what we just heard, in the devotional service of the Lord, seriously and sincerely, means seriously and sincerely, honestly, without hypocrisy, trying to please Krishna, that is bhakti. With his mind and words and body, anyone who does this seriously and sincerely tries to please the Lord with his mind, words, and bodies. And who is fixed in the activities of the prescribed devotional methods, is blessed by the Lord. according to his desire. So it's coming back again according to his desire. According to our desire, we'll be blessed by the Lord. So every once in a while, we should ask ourselves, well, what is it that drives my engine in Krishna consciousness? What am I actually desiring? We should know, as Dhruva is going to clearly find out and realize deeply, we should know what is the best thing to desire and what is not worthy of our desiring. So Krishna blesses according to our desire. If a devotee desires material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or even liberation from the material world, he is awarded these results. So, what do we want? We could, of course, no one would do it, but all those who want liberation into that corner, all those who want material sense gratification into that corner, and you're allowed to keep moving around in case your desires are changing, all those who want religiosity, that will be an empty corner. What's the other one there? Sense gratification, because the purpose of Dharma in the for a materialistic type of thinking to perform religiosity is artha, wealth, and the purpose of wealth is kama, to fill one's material desire. This is how a materialistically pious person thinks. So he's telling Dhruva, you're going to get whatever you want if you do this. So he's indirectly telling us the same thing, that be careful of what we desire, or act in such a way that our desires will become purified. And they will be, they will be, they will be. And what is actually the best thing to desire? This is something to really meditate upon and think about, and take all the different desires that plague my heart and take them out and say, okay, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want me to do? Why do you want me to do it? Is this really going, analyze it. Is this going to make me actually happy? Is this going to, what result will I get from this desire? So we should be introspective, and we should be thoughtful, and we should use shastra and also good common sense and experience to purify our desires. And even though they may sit in our heart due to our conditioning, we should know, if we understand in a humble way, you know, this maybe isn't the best thing, but okay, I have this desire. Like Dhruva said, I'm born in a Kshatriya family. I'm pushed by these modes of material nature. What can, if we have these desires, okay. So, but we should know that they are not the goal of life. And we should not try to cultivate and care for these weeds as if they were the actual plant that we wish was flourishing, wish to flourish. So this is what he tells Dhruva. And then he says, if one is very serious about liberation, be serious, he must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy. And he must certainly be aloof from the activities of sense gratification. You want, you're saying you want this very intensely. So here it is. Here's the process. Be serious. You get what you want, whatever it is. No sense gratification. Don't be whimsical. Follow the process. Please the Lord. And then in the final verse of the instructions, what Dhruva did when he heard all this, I mean, it's heavy. But Dhruva was already heavy. And he even became more heavy, as we'll find out. He was able to tip the whole universe practically. He was so heavy. To get the highest result, we have to pay the highest price. That's actually the truth. We may not have the capital to do it right now. Okay, but let's collect. So when Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, was thus advised by the great sage Narada, he circumambulated Narada out of respect, his spiritual master, and offered him respectful obeisances. Then, after circumambulating Narada, he immediately began his journey to Madhuvan, which is always imprinted with the lotus footprints of Lord Krishna, and which is therefore especially auspicious. Now, thus end class 3. Now we're going on to class 4. Narada Muni, Dhruva circumambulated him and left for Madhuvan, and Narada Muni then went to see Maharaj, the father of Dhruva Maharaj, Uttanapada. And Uttanapada, we can imagine how he was feeling. His co-wife had insulted Dhruva, and he didn't say anything, and he's the king. And because of this, this 5-year-old tender boy left for the forest. So what is any father going to be thinking if his 5-year-old boy is in the forest all by himself? Okay, I want a father to answer this. We already heard how mothers are so compassionate. What would a father naturally be thinking? Huh? You're feeling guilty? Excuse me? Lamenting, oh, I'm so controlled by my wife that I couldn't act properly. What else would he be thinking? Embarrassed, worried, ashamed, lamenting. He'd be really worried. Why would he be worried? He loves him, but what would he be? A five-year-old boy. Because it's not like there was no one else in the forest. There were tigers and snakes and lions. And this tender boy, he's just a child living in the palace. All his needs are supplied. And there he is in a forest, a dangerous forest. So he was lamenting his actions, feeling guilty and worried and terrible. And he was worrying about Dhruva. And then Narada Muni came. And Narada Muni told him, you should not worry about Dhruva. Why? You don't know your own son. He's actually so powerful and protected. He will achieve his results, and he will come back. And he will be perfectly safe because he's protected by Krishna. So don't worry. So upon hearing this from Narada Muni, what do you think Uttanapada did? Or how do you think his mood shifted? Usually when someone tells us, don't worry, we say, okay, and then they leave and we start worrying again. But what did Uttanapada do? He felt so relieved. And what else? And he wanted to see him again. And he was just waiting for that day when Dhruva would return, because Narada said he would return so he could hug him again and make up for it and etc. He was just waiting for Dhruva to return. That's the first part of the fourth class. Here's the second part. Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest of Madhavan and he began immediately bathing in the Yamuna River three times. He began performing incredible austerities, practicing the Ashtanga Yoga, controlling his breathing, controlling his mind, focusing his mind upon the form of the Lord. He began to minimize his eating. There is a description of how he minimized his eating. So austere. He only ate leaves, dry leaves that had fallen to the ground once every three days, once a week. Then he started taking water only every 3 days, no more leaves, then every week. And then he just started breathing infrequently. This was due... Now, don't anyone try to imitate this. when you perform austerities, even if they're minor and slight compared to what Dhruva performed, where is the most trouble coming from? It's the mind. So to perform austerities, one really has to control the mind. It's even more when we have to fast on an Ekadasi or Janmashtami or Gopurnima or Nityananda Trayodasi. Then it's the mind that gives us more trouble. And if the mind is fixed, then the body doesn't give trouble or anywhere near as much, maybe hungry. So how fixed Dhruva was in mind to be able to do this. And then he began to perform... was it him who did that asana? Did he do that one... He stood on one leg. Now, even though... What is that asana called? Vrikasana, I think, yes? When one stands... Any yogis here? Of course... Everyone is a yogi here. But there is Vrikasana. I think it is Vrikasana. I think he did that. Let me just check to make sure. Huh? What asan? Tarasan. Is that what it's called? Oh, that's Haranyakashipu's favorite asana. But this one, text 79, he kept himself steadily standing on one leg. Now, this may sound like a physical act, and of course it is a physical act, but to steadily stand requires the mind to be completely steady, in fact. And actually, yoga is much less, actual yoga, if it's going to be practiced as anything more than asana, the sitting, or even to do the asanas, to be practiced in anything other than exercise, it's really about consciousness and control of the mind. It's a spiritual practice, mechanical, physical, but spiritual practice. So his mind became steady enough to do that. His mind became, through his processes of the japa and the deity worship and his devotional attempts to please Krishna and the yoga and the cleanliness which brought him to the mode of goodness, helped to bring him to the mode of goodness. And of course he was bathing in the Yamuna, which purifies of contaminations, which means the modes of passion and ignorance. So therefore, because it's the mode of passion and ignorance that causes our mind to flip and flop and fall asleep, etc. It's passion and ignorance that cause the unsteadiness of the mind. and forcing us to act even against our own desires. It's passion and ignorance. Rajagano samud bhava mahasano mahapapma vidyanam ihavarinam. It is passion and ignorance. So he became pure by following the process exactly as Narada Muni had told him. And he became so fixed. And it wasn't just fixed in the asana of standing upon one leg. That was just the external manifestation. What anyone could see if they looked at him. But what he was really fixed in, because his mind was fully steady, it was his meditation upon the Lord. And he became so absorbed, because this is what Narada Muni told him to do. And this is the same process that we are told to do. If we want our perfection, we have to at least gradually move towards the consciousness, our consciousness being fully absorbed in devotional, loving service to Krishna. Krishna is the essential point. It is Krishna, Krishna consciousness. We have to become fully conscious, or our consciousness full of Krishna, which means our consciousness full of Krishna. That means there's two. And what is the consciousness of like of someone whose mind is fully absorbed in Krishna? There's five different rasas. Beginning with Shantaras, where one is fully meditating fully on Krishna's beautiful, incredibly beautiful form. And in Shantaras, someone is so captivated by the beauty, the exquisitely attractive beauty of Krishna's form, he can and he does simply stare at it within his mind's eye continuously, and it brings him full satisfaction, because Krishna's form is full of unlimited beauty. Unlimited beauty. How can we conceive with our finite mind and experience what unlimited beauty is? We can just say it's 1,000, 1,000,000, 1,000,000,000, 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, that we have ever seen or heard of. Chandra Sakanyaya. It's sort of like that. But one who is in Santaras, his mind is fully absorbed. And as what happened to Dhruva, by the end of 6 months, he had perfected this yogic process to the degree where his consciousness was fully absorbed. He thought it didn't waver any more than his body. Because you can't stand like that. If your body starts wavering, and if your mind starts wavering, you're going to fall over. Dhruva's mind was fixed on the beautiful form of the Lord, so much so that he lost any feeling of distinction or difference between himself and the Lord. And when he lost any distinction, because his consciousness was so fully, he had brought Krishna into his consciousness in a sense, and in that sense, because his consciousness was full of Krishna, in that sense he became one with Krishna, in that sense, while remaining individual. And then he began assuming, taking on the qualities of Krishna, because his, just like if you consume this much halava, you take on the weight of that halava. So Dhruva, in a sense, consumed with his consciousness, Krishna. And since Krishna is the Lord of the universe, his weight became as heavy as Krishna's own weight as the Lord of the universe. And then by his mere slightest movement of his toe, because he was on one leg on the earth and his toe shifted this way and that way in pressure, and the entire earth moved 2.5 inches this way and then 2.5 inches that way. Our acharyas have commented like that, which means a total movement of the earth of 5 inches going this way and that way, which is a lot. And then Dhruva, because he was already only breathing once every, he stopped his breathing. And suddenly, because he was, his consciousness was so much consumed Krishna, this affected the universal breathing, and there was no one in the universe who could breathe, including the demigods. And they became terrified because they could not breathe. I'll read Prabhupada's explanation of how Dhruva could do this. The verse, text 80, when Dhruva Maharaj became practically one in heaviness, because he had placed the Lord so firmly within his consciousness, due to his fully concentrating, closing all the holes of the body, the total universal breathing became choked up, and all the great demigods in the planetary systems felt suffocated and thus took shelter. And this is what a demigod does. He's in difficulty. He's a devotee. This is what it means to be a devotee. Whenever there's any difficulty, one takes shelter of Krishna. And to be an aspiring devotee is one who aspires. He desires, although he can't do it yet, to surrender to Krishna, which practically means whenever there is any difficulty at all, Krishna, 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 I have nowhere else to turn to but you. I am yours. Please take care of me. I am yours. Gotripte varanam tata. So the demigods, being devotees, even though they are sakam devotees, they have material desires, but they are devotees. When in this difficulty of being unable to breathe, they took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example Prabhupada gives in his purport is like when you are in an aeroplane. When hundreds of persons are sitting in an aeroplane, although they remain individual units, they remain, you only get one seat, you don't sit in the aeroplane in the sense that you sit everywhere, but yet your momentum, your movement, your force is going at the same speed as the aeroplane. They each share in the total force of the aeroplane, which runs at thousands of miles per hour. Similarly, when unit energy, our unit means one, individual energy, is identified with the service of the total energy, the unit energy becomes as powerful as the total energy. So it takes a full identification, a full absorption of consciousness. And therefore, because of his spiritual advancement, Dhruva Maharaj became almost the total heaviness, and he pressed down the whole earth. Then in the second paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada says something quite interesting that we could say is autobiographical. Please listen. This example of Dhruva Maharaj is closing the holes of his personal body and thereby closing the breathing holes of the total universe clearly indicates that a devotee, by his personal devotional service, can influence all the people of the whole world to become devotees of the Lord. If there is only one pure devotee in Krishna consciousness, he can change the total consciousness of the world into Krishna consciousness. This is not very difficult to understand if we study the behavior of Dhruva Maharaj. So then, Krishna, in the form of Lord Prishnigarbha, immediately hearing the pleas of the demigods, he goes to see Dhruva Maharaj to stop him from his austerities. Because Krishna does many things at once. By one action, he deals with many different people differently. So by this one action, he was, on behalf of the demigods, stopping Dhruva, but on behalf of Narada and Dhruva, he was going to give Dhruva Maharaj the blessing that he so dearly desired earlier. So he came, and he touched Dhruva Maharaj's head. And when he touched Dhruva Maharaj's head, of course, he appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, right in front of him, and then at the same time, he vanished from inside his heart, and Dhruva Maharaj was fully absorbed in thinking about him, and suddenly he wasn't in his heart, and he opened his eyes, and there the Lord was standing right in front of him. So he was enthralled by that, and he felt that he had really become alive in every way. Now we say that the soul is sleeping, but Dhruva's spiritual senses actually awakened, and it was a completely different experience. This is explained in the different purports. It was a completely different experience for him when his senses awoke upon seeing the Lord. And then the Lord touched him. And when the Lord touched him, Dhruva gained the ability to recite prayers. All the Vedas, all the Shastra became awakened within him. And therefore, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, his prayers contain the essence of the Vedas. And therefore, they should be heard with great seriousness. Maybe we can open our window on that side, and that side, and on that side, and that side. Now, Dhruva's prayers go from verse 6 in chapter 9 to 17. How many prayers is that? Well, don't take out calculators and computers. How many? Okay. Now, I'm going to summarize almost all of them and speak about a few of them. Very often, especially, and we can see it here, the essence of prayers or shastras are placed right in the middle. And at the end, there is a summary that gives us the essence. So, in a summarized form. So here, the essence of these prayers are really you could say they're 10 to 12, and he's moving towards them with 8 and 9. So I'll explain what I mean. The first thing that Dhruva says, oh Lord, he's looking at the Lord, Prishnigarbha, forearm form, beautiful, spiritually effulgent, we could say beautiful, but unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly effulgent, not really 5 times more beautiful than anyone we've ever seen, or 10 times more beautiful, or 1,000 times, or 1,000,000 times. He's unlimitedly beautiful, and all beauty springs from a spark of his beauty. So he's looking at him, and he's been praying to him and thinking about him and performing such incredible austerities to please him. And suddenly he's right in front of him. And then full knowledge is awakened within Dhruva by the Lord. And then he begins to speak. Text 6. I'm going to paraphrase as I've done. You are all powerful, he says, oh Lord. Because I'm making it short and summarizing it. And you, by your presence and your touch, you have spiritually enlivened and awakened me. All in existence. Now think of the different things in existence. First thing we think of, at least I'm thinking of, is all the people, devotees I'm seeing in front of me. Then my consciousness moves out to the windows, the open windows, and the rain, and the sunshine, and the trees, and then the big city of Melbourne, and the huge country of Australia, and the world, and the planets, and the many universes. And then there's the spiritual world, too. And the spiritual world has unlimited, infinite Vaikuntha planets. And the biggest infinite planet, you can put that in your computer and try to calculate it, the biggest infinite planet, bigger than the other infinite planets, is Vrindavan. If it's infinite, it's here too, because there's no place where it's not. So anyway, this is the Lord. He's standing in front of him, and he says, all in existence manifests through you. The Vedas, the knowledge of the Vedas, Vedas Chasavara Hame Babyo, is manifesting through the mouth of Dhruva Maharaj. And you have given Brahma's knowledge to Brahma. And you are the shelter of everyone who desires liberation. You are the friend of the distressed. And knowing you as such, knowing that you are all these things, that you are the one who gave knowledge to Brahma, that everything in existence comes from you, that those who desire freedom from misery, you give them shelter, and you are the friend of the distressed, and knowing that you are these things, how could anyone forget you? How could anyone forget you who actually knows who you are? So therefore, it is ignorance that causes forgetfulness. And the cure for ignorance is knowledge. So knowing Krishna, how could one forget him? Let us read directly here a little bit from the Bhagavatam. I'll read the verse itself. He says, O my master, Lord Brahma is fully surrendered to you. In the beginning, you gave him knowledge, and thus he could see and understand the entire universe. This is the process, my dear scientists, of seeing and understanding the entire universe. It's not taking quarks and gluons and trying to smash them into each other to see what's inside of them, so that you could take those smaller particles and smash them into each other to see what's inside of the smaller particles and speed the smaller particles up so much, and then boom. No. You gave him knowledge. And thus he could see and understand the entire universe. What can we understand with our tiny brains? And most of the greatest scientific understandings have not come through the analytical process. They've come through inspirations. Thus he could see, Brahma cannot see and understand the entire universe, just as a person awakens from sleep and visualizes his immediate duties. You are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation, and you are the friend of all who are distressed. Of course, when we're in distress, we need a good friend. Well, he is the friend, Dhruva says, of all that are in distress. How, therefore, can a learned person who has perfect knowledge of you, actual knowledge of you, complete knowledge of you, ever forget you? Prabhupada says in his purport. We'll just read some of half of the first paragraph. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be forgotten even for a moment by his surrendered devotee. So just see the thickness of the relationship between the Lord and his surrendered devotee. And Krishna is giving him that ability. His desire is so strong because he's surrendered. He's accepted Krishna as his shelter. There's so much love and trust in that. Otherwise, we can't do it. We can't surrender to someone who we don't trust. And we can't trust someone who we don't love. Think, is it true what I just said or not? The devotee understands that the Lord's causeless mercy is beyond his estimation. Nice, yes? He cannot know how much he has benefited by the grace of the Lord. The more a devotee engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, the more encouragement is supplied by the energy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that to those who are constantly engaged in devotional service with love and affection, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives intelligence from within, and thus they may make further progress. Being so encouraged, the devotee can never forget at any moment the Personality of Godhead. He always feels obliged. What's another word for obliged? Indebted, ingratiated, obliged, yes, all these words. Grateful too, yes? Maybe it's a little stronger even. Obliged. Grateful is more like, it's thank you. And obliged, locked in. You mean as in trapped? Okay, you've done so much for me and you've locked me in. Now I have, and I'm obliged to do something for you. All right. How many minutes before I'm out? But that's, of course, minus the love. He always feels obliged to him for having achieved increased power and devotional service by his grace. There's more to the purport. Then Dhruva's next prayer. That prayer was, how could anyone forget you, knowing you who knows you? Next prayer. Persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of this bag of skin are certainly influenced by your illusory energy. In spite of having you, who are like a desire tree, and are the cause of liberation from birth and death, foolish persons such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. It's interesting to consider that sense gratification is available for those who live in hellish conditions, which makes hell even worse. Because if you're in a bad situation and it's steadily bad, you get used to it after a while and it doesn't feel so bad. But if you occasionally get sense gratification and you're in hell, then, oh no, I'm back in hell again. So he's saying that how foolish I am. Because I desired from a desire tree. A desire tree reciprocates with whatever we desire, and I desired something so petty and so small that's even available for people, for animals, for hogs and pigs, and people in hell who don't have a desire tree before them, who is reciprocating with them. So how foolish I am. I'm always reminded of that story that Prabhupada told of the very sincere, pious old lady who was carrying the bundle, the huge bundle. You still see this in Braja. You don't see it very much in Mumbai, but in Braja you see it. They can't pick it up on their heads, the wood that they've collected with the other ladies, so that two ladies get on either side of the big, huge bundle of wood, and these ladies have such strong necks, and they put these huge bundles of wood, and then they walk. So this one lady was walking through the forest, going to bring the wood to the town or the village so she could sell it or use it. And there was a low over branch of a tree, and it knocked the wood off of her head. And there was no one around to help her. So she called out, "Oh, Krishna," she was pious, "Oh, Krishna, there is no one but you who can help me. I am in such a difficult position. Oh, Krishna, oh, Ganesham, oh, help me, Lord, help me." And he came. "You've called for me. What can I do for you? Please help me get the wood back on my head. There's no one around. I can't do it by myself." So Dhruva is saying, how foolish. I've done something like that. In front of you, I'm desiring something ridiculous. I could have asked for 10 times the amount of money that I could have gotten from the wood and not have to carry it at all. That's also foolish. Or whatever that's related to us in the material world and asking Krishna. This is Dhruva's realization. Because you can give everything. Now what do I want? And I've wanted foolish things. So that's on the karma level he's saying, and he's including himself as foolish. And then he moves up because there's a kama, sarva kama va, and then the next one. So yeah, moksha kama. So that verse is very interesting because akama means the devotees. And sarva kama means the regular materialists. And the moksha kama, the impersonalists, but impersonalists usually think we have no desires. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that they're placed after the sarva kama people because their desires are even more. Because they desire to be free from all death, from all suffering. The ordinary materialists don't even have such big desires. They just want to enjoy something. But they have, the moksha kamis are the biggest desirers. Far from being desireless, they have the biggest desires. So no matter what kind of desires one has, if you are a udaradi, you should still worship Krishna with tivra, with focus and force. So now he's going to turn, he's criticized himself for being a Sarvakami. And then he says, my Lord, the transcendental bliss derived from meditating upon your lotus feet. So he's moving to the devotees, setting up a comparison. The transcendental bliss derived from meditating upon your lotus feet or hearing about your glories from pure devotees is so unlimited that it is far beyond the stage of Brahmananda, where one thinks himself merged in the impersonal Brahman as one with the Supreme. Since Brahmananda, the bliss of being one, Sayujya Mukti, with Brahman, the greatest, is also defeated by the transcendental bliss derived from devotional service, then what to speak of the temporary blissfulness of elevating oneself to the heavenly planets, which is ended by the separating sword of time? Although one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, he falls down in due course of time. So he's putting three different processes and practices, or even three levels of desires, in comparison with each other. And he's saying, and there he is, on one level he knows the whole Vedas, and on another level he's completely experienced of all these things by now. Because he started as a Sarvakami and ended up meditating upon the lotus feet of the Lord. And he's saying, this is what's wonderful. This indeed is what's wonderful. I want this. Now, let me just read what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on this 10th verse. Excuse me. He doesn't comment on the 10th verse, he comments on the 11th verse. We'll read that. Dhruva Maharaj continued. So he's putting things in perspective of what's worth desiring, because everything is ultimately based on our desires. Of course, what we deserve, and we tend to desire more than we deserve. And what Dhruva did, he brought up his level of deserving to his level of desiring by his austerities and determination and his intense desire. So that's what happens. If our desire is great enough, we'll bring up the rest of our being to that. So he's spoken about levels of desiring. And then he describes in the next few verses, which is what I see is the heart of the prayers, of his prayers, what he wants. Now that he's so experienced, he's seen the Lord directly in front of him. He's become purified by his process. He's attracted the Lord's mercy to the degree that the Lord has touched him and awoken Vedic knowledge within him. What does he want? 11 and 12 describe that. Dhruva Maharaj continued. 11. O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly. Their hearts are always and only filled with these desires to please you, to serve you. I want that association. So I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly, as the waves of a river constantly flow. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life, because they are with you, O Lord, and you are like the sun, which dissipates all contamination. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nascent, ignorant ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. I will be able to cross beyond this ocean by devotional service. And why do I want to cross beyond this ocean? Because it is filled with waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. Crossing, it will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existent. So he wants the association of devotees who are purely engaged, always, constantly, in Krishna's service, so he can hear about Krishna's eternal pastimes from them. O Lord, who has a lotus navel, if a person happens to associate with a devotee whose heart always hankers after your lotus feet, seeking always their fragrance, he is never attached to the material body or in a bodily relationship to offspring, friends, home, wealth, and wife, which are very, very dear to materialistic persons. Indeed, he does not care for them. He may do his duty, but his attachment is to the Lord. He may do his duty, and he may do it with great affection because of his attachment to the Lord. Now let us read Prabhupada's purport to the first of those two verses that I read in emphasis 11, where he said, kindly bless me so I may associate with great devotees. So, and then he talks about, because I'm becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and nature which are eternal. Prabhupada's purport. The significant point in Dhruva Maharaj's statement is that he wanted the association of pure devotees. Transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. Now this purport of Prabhupada's is very interesting, and it's understood by different devotees in different ways. We have therefore, so what is Prabhupada speaking about here? What is Dhruva Maharaj speaking about? What does he want? Association of devotees. Because, and Prabhupada speaking about, the significant point is the association of devotees. And therefore, Prabhupada continues, we have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So what is the purpose of Prabhupada's International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Association of devotees, and that devotees are pure devotees, sincere, serious devotees, so that they can give association, be and gain the benefit oneself and give association. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna conscious society and yet engaged in Krishna consciousness is living in a great hallucination. So what is Prabhupada saying there? He's definitely saying don't leave ISKCON. But what's the purpose of ISKCON? He's just said that. Huh? What did he say? Therefore, we have established, because we can't be Krishna conscious alone. We can't be like Haridas Thakur and go to the forest. We need, Prabhupada told me, we are social by nature. And if we don't make friendship with the devotees, we'll be forced by our nature to make friendship with non-devotees. And if you make friendship, have intimate association with non-devotees,
you will not be able to follow the principles. So to have a society where there are devotees, pure devotees, sincere devotees, that we can have very intimate, loving exchanges with, and here also is what ISKCON is about. And therefore, if we think we can be Krishna conscious alone, he's talking about the association of devotees, and yet engage in Krishna consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible. And then Prabhupada goes on. From this statement by Dhruva Maharaj, it is clear that unless one is associated with devotees, his devotional service does not mature. So we need to stay in the association of devotees. If we don't associate with devotees, we won't mature, we won't advance. It does not become distinct without the association of devotees. It does not become distinct from material activities. The Lord says, Satam prasangam mama virya samvido bhavanti ritkana rasayanaha, rasayanaha, in Kapila Muni's teachings. Only in the association of pure devotees can the words of Lord Krishna be fully potent and relishable to the heart and ear. Dhruva Maharaj explicitly wanted the association of devotees. That association in devotional activities is just like the waves of an incessantly flowing river. In our Krishna conscious society, we have full engagement 24 hours a day. Every moment of our time is always busily engaged in the service of the Lord. This is called the incessant flow of devotional service. So this, for the devotees, for all the devotees, this puts a lot of pressure and weight that we should be the kind of devotees that Prabhupada is speaking about. That means very, very, very sincere. So our association is worthwhile. And we should keep, and our friendship should be very, very deep. Very, 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 very deep. Of course, we can't have equally deep friendships with everyone, but we have to have friends, deep devotional friendships. Otherwise, we will get very lonely. It's so important. If we don't have that, we will get lonely. And if we don't have, we can't satisfy our need for pleasing social dealings with the devotees, then we will have to, forced to seek it elsewhere amongst non-devotees. And then as Prabhupada told me, we will not be able to follow the principles, which means we won't even be able to advance. We won't be able to advance. And we can't. Being alone isn't an alternative because no one can do that in this age. So the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati called that imitative and kebal kaitava, which means, but not only cheating, kebal, fully only. Skipping one paragraph. The purport of this statement by Dhruva Maharaj is that devotional service and the association of devotees is the cause of the development of further devotional service. By devotional service only, one is elevated to the transcendental planet of Goloka Vrindavan. And there also, there is only devotional service and association with devotees. For the activities of devotional service, both in this world and in the spiritual world, are one and the same. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain, there's ripe and unripe. When our love for Krishna or bhakti is unripe, it is devotional service in the material world. And when it is ripe or mature and it is pukka, then it is in the spiritual world. So we want to make our devotional service mature. And that should, and therefore Prabhupada said, that maturation process is in the association of devotees. Now, what is the difficulty in associating with the devotees? Now, I don't know if everyone wants to this is a good time we can get into a very honest and deep discussion about what, because there are difficulties. There are difficulties because this one I like, this one I don't like, this one does this and I don't like that kind of a thing, and this person talks about others, and this person does this, and this person does this. I'm the only one who's pure, of course. Never does anything wrong. So there are difficulties, but yet we can't advance without the association of devotees. So what is the resolution, the reconciliation between we need something, but at times it gets difficult to take it, the medicine that we need, something that's required, not even medicine, because medicine is, we tend to think it's bitter, and we don't want to think that. But what is the reconciliation? What is it that makes it? Excuse me, humility. I don't have anything particular in my mind on this. What helps you? Because everyone who's been a devotee more than 15 minutes understands that someone has a program in the house and they invite everyone, but they don't invite you. And who knows what? If it's not one thing, it's another, or your children don't get along with that family's children, or the wives of this family, or the husbands don't get along, or who knows what, but there's always some difficulty or another. I mean, of course, it's not that Dhruva didn't have any difficulties when he doing what he did, but okay, what helps you, I'm asking in a personal way, to keep in the association of devotees and keep the association sweet and favorable and not like bitter medicine. Yes, Prabhu. Kirtan. Thank you very much. Yeah, yes, that's a wonderful answer. Thank you. Why? It's
harmonious.
It's harmonious. And
it brings
everyone together and above the little things that are always bothering the mind, because I see this with myself. When I'm feeling not satisfied, then little things really disturb me. But when I'm feeling satisfied, it's easy to be tolerant of little things. So I think that in one sense is part of what you're saying, that kirtan, we become happy. And therefore we can tolerate the little inconveniences that are required. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Thinking of all the wonderful service the devotees have done and all their wonderful qualities.
Thinking of the good qualities of devotees. There's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes a very specific quality of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And that quality that is, of course, he used to know the Bhagavatam, and he could sing the verses so sweetly in different melodies. Each verse he could sing in three different melodies, different ones, but very sweetly. And Rupin Sanatan used to have him sing the Bhagavatam to them. So wonderful. And of course, he had so much mercy from Mahaprabhu, who told him, first time he visited him in Puri, to go home and serve your parents because they're devotees. But he would not hear criticism of devotees, even if it's true, if it was true. Even if it was true, he just didn't want to hear it. Rather than me, who I especially want to hear it when it's true, because that's the weak point that I can. Now all the bad thoughts I have about him are proved correct. And everything he said about me is proved incorrect. I just pray that Krishna is much more liberal-minded than I am when he judges me than when I judge the others. Thank you. Any other? Yes? That's helpful thing in your own experience. Hare Kirtan, and then F. Okay. The positive taste. And what's the alternative? Why? Maybe we should, because the thoughts of the devotees are so nice in this, maybe we should pass the microphone to the devotee who wants to speak. Do we have a cordless handy? Is that your only experience, that the association with devotees is sweet? Do you have a difficult time sometimes? Wait, I'm not yet. Not, I'm asking because you made that comment. Okay, so sometimes does it become difficult for you? Okay, so you're saying when it becomes difficult, thinking that the associating with non-devotees is even more difficult, so that pushes you back to the association of devotees. Did I understand you? So it's easy, and the dissociation of devotees is difficult, but tastes better. I don't mean to make it silly, but I what I really wanted to know was whether you found the taste was very sweet always with association with devotees.
Once I become comfortable with the association of devotees, it becomes much easier to associate with devotees than non-devotees, because there is a reciprocal relationship, there is a mutual togetherness, everyone is acting for Krishna, not for themselves, and there is a selfless component to that, and it's a sheer joy to be in, and when I'm away from it, I long to come back to it. It's like I'm a fish and I'm on land when I'm not with devotees.
Okay, let me ask you a question. What pulls you away from it then? May not be don't feel required to answer. You know, if it's a question that you don't want to answer.
Desires, yeah. Unconscious desires.
Okay, well then, just make them conscious and come.
They are conscious too.
Okay, but just remember, one of the main lessons we learned from Dhruva Maharaj, that having material desires does not keep one away from performing devotional service. So despite whatever your situation is, then please stay in the association of devotees, keep association with devotees, and perform devotional service.
Hare Krishna.
Please. Hare Kirtan. The question again is what was the question again?
So what keeps me in the association?
How do you deal with the difficulties that do come in the association of so many different kinds of people, etc.? It was more that. How do you deal with that as opposed to what do you find difficult about everyone else? Yes.
For me, one of the most important things is Srila Prabhupada saying that he really wants us to cooperate with one another. And I know that when it gets really difficult, that this is my motto, that I'm really trying to stick with that, okay, try to cooperate, try to just tolerate and get along with one another. So keep Guru and Krishna and Srila Prabhupada somehow or other in the foreground.
Yes. When it pass it to someone else who has their hand raised. Yes, you may. Yeah. Especially because you're holding the microphone.
Thank you. Yes. So I shall.
Yes.
What's helped me and keeps helping me is to remind myself that what I want to become attached to and what I'm having difficulties is the material aspect of myself and the devotees, and that is actually meant to be imperfect, so that I am always impelled to move to the spiritual goal.
Yes. So you see the difficulties, if I've understood you correctly, that come up in the disturbances as indications of possibly at least your own impurities.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though it appears to be coming from someone else, it's reflecting back in you. And
yes.
Then you try to be aware of that and deal with that.
Yeah. And that also, that is a material aspect. It's actually, it's meant to be like that.
Mm.
That's the transcendental perfection behind it.
Mm. And one could even say, well, this is Krishna's arrangement teaching me something.
Yeah,
nice. Thank you. Passing on to someone else who has their hand raised.
I find when it gets difficult, if you remind yourself that this is Krishna's arrangement for my purification, that's actually good for me, that helps.
Yes, seeing Krishna's hand in it and his kindness. For you. Yes. Anyone else like to comment on this? Microphone up here.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I heard the devotees talking about humility, cooperation, helping. But for me, they are the results. The bottom line, the root cause, how we can get this, get along or adjusting nature is by increasing our level of consciousness, which comes from knowledge. If we are growing in our consciousness, then these things will fall automatically in place.
So my question was, how do you as an individual deal with difficulties? And you said by increasing your consciousness, if I've understood you correctly.
That's
increasing
right,
your transcendental knowledge.
Yes.
Thank you.
Personally, for me, hearing lectures of my spiritual master, specifically his narration of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the realizations, that helps me a lot in reminding me about my own anarthas and then how I should deal with them.
Give an example, please. I mean, no, maybe if you'd like.
Yeah,
an example.
Example was he describes how one of the brahmanas tries to blaspheme an exalted acharya, like, you know, even Srinivas Acharya, out of envy for him. And outside his house, he says that he's doing some black magic or something like that. And then how, you know, how the Lord doesn't give him a taste for devotional life. In fact, the Lord puts him in a very bad material condition at the end of the day after that. So he has, in his lectures, he has time and again stressed on the importance that sometimes we become too project-oriented and we try to become very great devotees, but and that's where envy comes in. And the only way of dealing with the envy is to constantly hear from spiritual master. He also says that, and when we hear from him, then we get reminded of like that.
Thank you. Abhishek, and then I'm going to stop because there was a little more I wanted to. But thank you very much. Very nice comments, all. Everyone.
I find it helps if we're just more sensitive to each other, because what I understand of Krishna consciousness is that Vaishnavas are intensely personal as opposed to being self-centered. For example, in Mayapur, the brahmacharya I was staying with used to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and start chanting. It didn't work too well with me. And it didn't help when he said, for example, the holy name will purify you. I can't sleep with through noise, so That was a problem. But then when he started, whatever he got, he was actually a brahmachari, so he didn't have very much funds. But whatever mahaprasadam he used to buy, he used to share it, no matter what he got, even if it was something he really liked to eat. So just being more sensitive and personal, I guess, really helps.
So my question was, how do you deal with the difficulties? And the way it almost sounded is if everyone would be more sensitive, that's where I could deal with all the difficulties. So how would you, so taking the medicine that we're prescribing, so we should be more sensitive to others' needs. Hmm. Because it's so, if we try to change the world, and if we make the world being very different from it already is, as a prerequisite for our own happiness, we're going to be very unhappy. But if we can just figure out what our duty is, what we have to do, that shifts everything. That shifts our own consciousness. And then that changes. So how did you deal with that, by the way?
I spoke to him about it.
And what did he do?
Initially, not too much.
And then after your preaching, he was sleeping till 10 o'clock every morning and everything was fine. No, I'm teasing. Little. But I had this experience when I was teaching young children quite a few years ago. I was also learning how to teach. And one of the principles that I learned was that when you're in a bad mood, you see everything that everyone else is doing is terrible and their faults continuously. So I remembered that very, very clearly doing that. I'd come into a classroom with a whole bunch of young boys and I'd be in a bad mood. And they'd be everything. They wouldn't sit still. They wouldn't do their work properly. And I'd say, sit still and do your work properly and do this and do that. And the more I said that, the more bad things I saw that they were doing. And then I studied this principle, is that you have to shift your consciousness. And what we were taught is that you have to start seeing the good that they're doing. And the example was that even if you can't find anything good, but this one boy is breathing. You have to say to him, you're doing a great job of breathing. I really like the way you're breathing today. It's really good. And then you start doing that, and somehow or another, your consciousness starts shifting. And then you start seeing that others are breathing nicely as well. It's not only this one. And then you start saying, really, you're sitting actually really nicely. You are really, you're listening very nicely too. And you're sitting so nicely. And you're sitting very nicely, too. And then, suddenly, with your consciousness starts changing, that everyone appears to be doing really nicely. And it appears like they've all started to become more cooperative. But actually, what's really happened is your consciousness has changed, or my consciousness has changed. So that was one thing that I learned like that. So if we start seeing the good, if I start seeing the good, even though it may be very difficult to see, then that shifts my consciousness. And also what I find out, when I try to see the good, that my mind doesn't want to see the good. It wants to see the bad. And then I say, oh, no, but the book says that you're supposed to see the good. And then my mind start saying no after what he's done to you, and he's done this and this, and you want to see the good, and it insists on seeing the bad. And then I have to say to my mind, you're doing a very good job of breathing today because you're not doing anything else that's good. Be quiet. Then it revealed where the real problem is. It's in the mind. My mind, rather, not the mind, my mind. So the point was that Dhruva was saying was that because he wants the association of devotees so that he could hear about Krishna. He's becoming mad, and this should be one of the essential ingredients that comprises the association of devotees. It should be Krishna Katha and Kirtan. And even and Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sundarbha, he says, whatever devotional services, other devotional service we do, because Mahaprabhu said, Kalona Stevana Stevana Steva Gatyanyata, it should be accompanied by Harinam. Whatever devotion, other devotion, it should be accompanied by the chanting of Krishna's holy names. I'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, part of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment on this 11th text too. This translation, it was again, because it was a while ago before we read it. May I always have the association of great devotees, O Unlimited Lord. This is a different translation. Who, with pure hearts, who perform bhakti to you. By this association, intoxication from drinking the nectar of your pastimes and qualities, intoxicated by drinking the nectar of your pastimes and qualities, I shall easily combat and defeat the ocean of material existence, which is full of terrible suffering. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, bhakti composed of hearing and chanting will not be sweet without proper association. That's what Prabhupada also emphasized. Therefore, Dhruva prays for the association of those who continually perform bhakti. But then, we still have fear of the ocean of suffering caused by samsara. Raising his hands in pride, Dhruva speaks, I will overpower the terrible ocean of material life, which is full of countless pains, by the strength of that association. Let it come before me. Let us see. Nothing is impossible for me. I will be drunk with tasting the nectar of your qualities and pastimes. The qualities of material life, such as rivalry, ignorance, and hatred, cannot make this drunkard suffer. Even death cannot touch the person who is drunk immortal nectar. By bhakti, which is produced by association with devotees, one directly meets the Lord. And then Dhruva continues with his prayers. He's described what he wanted, what he didn't want. And then he completes his prayers. That was 12. Not there. So a person, I've summarized that by saying, a person who is attached to that association, that devotee association, will have no material attachments and no material difficulties and no material entanglement. Then, in the final section of his prayers, he speaks about the Lord's form being the ashraya, the rest of and the source of all of creation, that his form is not of this world. He is the supersoul who possesses all the qualities that are mentioned in these verses. Your form is not of this world. All creation winds up into you at the time of destruction of the universe, and it comes from you. And again, he's a form, he's a person. That form I see right before me. So therefore, because he is a person, because he has a form, he is his form, we can talk about him. He has activities, he has a nature, he has qualities. So therefore, there can be Krishna Katha, there can be Krishna Kirtan, because he is a person. Because, I mean, if the ultimate was impersonal Brahman that is nirgun, has no qualities, what would be the Kirtan be like? There's nothing to say, nothing to do, nothing to talk about, nothing to glorify. So Prabhupada always said, the Mayavadis should remain silent. Chalo, jao. So, you are the super soul. You have qualities. You're a person. But yet, even though you're a person, you're an unlimited person. And universes, all existence that he spoke of, comes from you. And it comes back into you. And yet, he's a person. And yet, he holds up Govardhan Hill. And performs his activities with the devotees in Braja. You are fully liberated. You are the witness of everything. Everything. You are pure goodness. You never change. You are the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. You possess all opulences. You are the master of the modes of nature. You are different from ordinary living entities. You maintain the universe, yet you are aloof. And you are the one who enjoys all sacrifice. And the impersonal Brahman is also you. It is the effulgence of your body. And then finally, there's one verse in conclusion that Dhruva says, and I will read that, which summarizes what he wants. He says, O Lord, this is the 17th verse, the final verse in his prayers. O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified. Now please listen to this closely, because there's something I want to say. I've said it already, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will make the point in a very wonderful way. But let's listen carefully to what Dhruva is saying as his conclusion and understand what it means and what does it mean to us. You are the supreme personified form of all benediction. It all comes from you, O Lord, O person. Therefore, one who abides in your devotional service with no other desires, worshipping your lotus feet, for one who is like that, who abides, who lives, his existence is in your devotional service and serving you with devotion, with no other desires, worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king, and better than lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. So what is the benediction? Krishna can give everything. He is the personification of all benedictions. And he is the one who is benedicting each and every one of us with what we already have. And he is the one who's given everyone what they have, from the greatest to the lowest. What is the benediction that comes to one from worshipping Krishna's lotus feet? It is the worship of his lotus feet. It is his service. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causeless, merciful maintainer. And you are like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. Now, I'll read a few sections of Prabhupada's purport and then read something Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Dhruva Maharaj knew that he had come to worship the Lord in devotional service with a motive to get the kingdom of his father. Such an unadulterated, what does unadulterated mean? Impure, mixed. Devotee can never see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Dhruva therefore felt very grateful for the causeless mercy of the Lord, because indeed he was seeing him face to face. The Lord is so merciful that he does not only fulfill the desires of a devotee who is driven by ignorance, that not only does he fulfill the desires of a devotee who is driven by ignorance and desires for material benefit, but he also gives such a devotee all protection, just as a cow gives milk to a newly born calf. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord gives intelligence to the constantly engaged devotee so that he may gradually approach the Lord without difficulty. A devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. A devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. And then, right at the very end, Lord Chaitanya therefore taught us not to ask from the Supreme Personality any benediction such as material wealth, popularity, or a good wife, once it simply prayed to the Lord to be constantly engaged in his transcendental loving service. In his loving service, it is transcendental, not dutifully only engaged because I have to do it, but be engaged always in his transcendental loving service. Dhruva Maharaj, being cognizant, what does cognizant mean? Aware of his desire for material benefit, wanted protection from the Lord so that he might not be misled or deviated from the path of devotional service by material desires. That's what his prayer means. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Again, the verse. Your lotus feet are the highest attainable blessing, surpassing material blessings like the acquisition of a kingdom. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, please listen. Oh, that I said. O young boy, it is true, taking the position, he's explaining the Lord's mood in saying this. O young boy, it is true. You know my swarup, my form. Though now you are without material desire, I will give you the result that you previously were determined to achieve. Please take it. Describing his ignorance, Dhruva prays for the sweetness of prema in this verse. O Lord, your lotus feet are the highest blessing, the supreme result, more than acquisition of a kingdom. For who are you the highest blessing? You are the personification of the purusharthas for those who worship you without material desires. But the Lord maintains even wretched persons like me who worship you with desires by giving a little sweetness of your lotus feet obtained by worship. By giving us, he maintains us, by giving us a little sweetness of your lotus feet, which is obtained by those who worship you without desires. And you've given that to me. And therefore, I want that. And that taste I had for the kingdom, which is a huge material desire, has now turned into smoke and vaporized. It's gone. Because you've given me the sweetness, which is really reserved for those who have no material desires. Then he asks the question, what is the reason you have done this? And the answer he gives is, because you are eager to give mercy. And in that is our hope, at least my hope, that Krishna's nature is that he is eager to give mercy. Isn't that reassuring? Kamva dayanam saranam brajema. He is eager. He wants to give his mercy. He wants to give his blessings. He wants to give the sweet taste of his lotus feet. That serving his lotus feet gives. So this is the Krishna that we're worshipping. This is the Krishna we're worshipping. I'll read this. Let's see if I can find it quickly. Oh. No. Oh, I only have the Sanskrit written. You have Chaitanya. Can you? You're in folio. CC. Antya 1108. Easy to remember that. Antya 1108. Britasya Pashadi Garunapi Naparadam from Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. He's Britasya. He's describing, Rupa Goswami is describing the qualities of the Lord. That he doesn't, you commit an offense to him, and he sees that as naaparada. He doesn't take offense in that. Sevan managapi kritam bohuda abhyupati. And if you do a little service to him, he takes that as very great. Avishkaroti pushunap asvi nabhyasuyam. And if someone is envious of him, he does not return that envy. Silena, what does sila mean? Sila. Qualities. This is the nimala mati. This is the pure mind, the qualities that the prusottam yam, that the Lord possesses. And he likes to give mercy. Kamva dayalum saranam brajema. Who could find a more wonderful Lord to worship? That verse, Kamva dayalum saranam brajema, Om pakiyam stana kalakutam jukhamsya idyad vapi swabhi lebhe. You've given the position of datri, of nurse to Putana, who came to kill you because she was imitating a devotee. We read this yesterday and heard about this yesterday. So therefore, Kamva Dayalum, who is more dayalu, more merciful than you, my dear Krishna? So if he's ready to do that, give himself in relationship to Putana, how does he reciprocate with the Brijbasis? That was the point. He can't even do this. This is our Supreme Lord. This is our Krishna. He remains forever indebted to his devotees. So the exact translation is... Oops, 108. What's that? If I have the right verse number written down? No. I had the wrong verse. Anyway, I gave a rough translation. So Vishwanath continues saying, because he's a young boy, Dhruva, even though he does not give me pure bhakti, I will give him a taste of pure bhakti's results. Sweetness, my sweetness. So Dhruva was a very simple, he was a boy. We should become like children in that sense. And just give something to Krishna with devotion. Oh. so much more in the pastime. And then it goes on. The last thing I wanted to say, and then I shall end, is that Dhruva, sometimes, I'll say it for myself, it's sort of like a confession, but sometimes I learn a lesson, and then I forget the very lesson that I had learned and do the same foolish thing again. But when Dhruva learned his lesson, he did not forget. Because he was very fixed and determined, he learned it to the deepest core of his heart. So later on, Dhruva becomes the king. And then Dhruva's brother Uttama and Dhruva's stepmother Saruchi die in a forest fire. And Dhruva becomes very angry. And he wants to punish the Yakshas who have killed his brother, dared to kill the brother of the king, King Dhruva. So Dhruva goes to Alakapuri and he kills thousands of Yakshas. He decimates them. They use magic. They use everything to retaliate. But Dhruva kills them because he's so angry that his brother has been killed. Then these Yakshas are under the protection of Kuver. So Swayambhuva Manu, Dhruva's grandfather, comes to Dhruva and he says, please stop killing them. And these exchanges between Dhruva, Prabhupada's purports, and what Swayambhuva Manu says are very, very wonderful. And he says, one of the things he says is that Kuver will become very angry at us. And why make him an enemy? Why kill so many thousands just because of the death of one person? So Dhruva, because his superior has said this, and he stops. And Kuver comes to him and is very pleased. And Kuver, when the treasurer, the one who holds, who writes the checks, so to speak, for the universal wealth is pleased with you, you're not going to have to go on the dole, for sure. Wealth is going to become pouring from the sky, from everywhere for you. So Kuver is pleased and he says to Dhruva, because you've done this, I will give you whatever you want. Again, he's in that situation. But here, the time it's different because he has an opportunity to get whatever he wants. Kingdoms, unlimited wealth. Because everything, again, is based on desire. Please, Kuvera says, ask without hesitation. Don't think you have to be good, and follow what they say. Without hesitation, just ask whatever benediction you want from me. And Dhruva replies in one verse, and one verse only. He asks, and Maitreya relates this to Vidura, he begged. He didn't ask. He begged that he might have unflinching faith. Unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, crossing over the ocean of suffering of this world would become effortless. Samasitam ye parapalava plavam. Mahatpadam punyaya shomarari. Bhavam buddhiya vatsapadam. This ocean of suffering and misery will shrink to vatsapadam, the size of the calf hoofprint. because one will have attained param padam, the topmost abode, just by this, just by being Krishna conscious, just by being absorbed in Vrityam Adhoksasa, just by being absorbed in this wonderful Lord who wants to give benedictions and be merciful. It is his nature. So he really learns his lesson. And may I also learn my lesson. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Nityananda Prabhu ki jai. Nitai Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Radha Vallabha Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Hare Krishna.
I would like to thank His Grace Guru Jagannatha Guru Mother Jagatirini for coming to the underground to enlighten us once again.